I declare the council meeting open at 6:31, thereabouts. I begin by acknowledging that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. I ask if any of the elected members present foresee any potential conflict of interest with an item on the agenda. No. This is a hybrid meeting, so it's being broadcast. The audio will be recorded. Elected members are advised, if you're in the room, that to speak at all, you must just remember to have your microphone on. Otherwise, those who are online won't be able to hear. And feel free to bring it to the chair's attention if someone online is wanting to speak, because they're not in my field of sight. Thank you. Would someone like to move confirmation of the minutes of the last meeting? Moved Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Telfer. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Would someone like to move that the communications reports be received? Moved Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Schilling. Thank you. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you.
Just the minutes.
As an opportunity for verbal reports. So does anyone wish to? Councillor Hull.
Yeah, just briefly, Mr. Mayor. Members may or may not be aware that under the new development code, there's been a new application for the ex-convenience service station in Sturt. Members should be aware that the community is rallying to the cause again. Letterbox drop is happening this week. A proposed public meeting again on site, and going through the motions again as they did last time. So I think it's important to know that the community is again rallying to try and stop that development.
Thank you, Councillor Hull. Hopefully that'll be based on accurate information. Councillor Schilling, you wanted to report something?
Thank you, Councillor Mayor Hannah. Just thought I'd report to the Chamber on a recent campaign that myself and several staff have been a part of, the Drop Your Boss campaign. Between the four of us, Mr. Bowden, myself, Mr. Della Coombs and Ms. Swart, we raised $2,961 for youth homelessness, and we will be being dropped out of a plane at 7,500 feet in a few weeks. Thank you to all those who supported us, especially those from the community. And great experience. Look forward to it.
Thank you for taking the drop on my behalf, Councillor Schilling. Any others? Councillor Valescu?
Just quickly note that I was at the Kitchen Caddy launch, as was Councillor Hull and yourself. It was really successful. It's a good program. It was great to see us get Sophie Thompson there as well. So I think, look forward to seeing how that impacts on our red bin waste.
Thank you. Any others? Then I'll move on. Moving down to committee recommendations. Would someone like to move confirmation of the Planning and Development Committee and the Special Review and Selection Committee public minutes? Moved Councillor. Moves Councillor Mason. Did you wish to speak to it, Councillor Mason? Seconded Councillor Duncan. No further comment. Then all those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Corporate reports for decision. First of all, on page 36, the horse-related activities code amendment. We have a submission ready to go to kick things off if the minister wishes it to proceed. Someone like to move that way? Councillor Valescu, did you wish to speak to it, Councillor?
I think it's an opportunity for the stables to move into the adjoining Morpheville property, and we're not stopping them from doing their current activities, but hopefully we can have more appropriate activity, like housing activity there. The less horses we have on the street, the less reminders that they leave on our streets that they were there, the easier. And I don't think it's not like a dog. People can't actually clean it up because they've got to manage the horse in the traffic. So I think it'll make a nicer area and you know, provides a financial incentive as well.
Seconded, Councillor Clancy. Anything to add? Any opposition questions, Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to speak against it with passion. I was on council and was heavily involved in what was the current zoning all those years ago. And prior to that, it was a nightmare for elected members in that ward because there was stable application after stable application. People were objecting because they didn't want to have a stable next door, across the road, with all those inherent things that come with this industry. And it is an industry. It is no different to what would happen in Edwardstown if you started to actually allow residential development in amongst that light industry, because you have smell. Councillor Valescu talked about the excrement on the road, bags of it, in fact, all down the footpath, flies, and all those things that come with that industry. After we actually got that zoning through, relative calm returned to that area for many, many years. And here we are now meddling with something that's working well. If Councillor Valescu was correct to say that they're all going to move over the racecourse, that would be great, but it's not going to happen in that fashion. If it happens completely, it's going to take years. And in the interim, we can still have horse application for stables in amongst residential development. And, you know, whilst we might say, oh, no, we don't approve, they will take us to court like they did before. QCs, it's not an under-resourced industry. Not only that, you allow these people to actually have better use of the land, and I get that. If they're going to move across, they can sell their land at a reasonable price. So a new homeowner comes in with a young family alongside a stable or behind a stable or near a stable, you're going to have that conflict, Mr. Mayor. And that's why I think at this point, this is not going to work. And I think we're setting this council and the residents up to fail in the few years to come.
Thank you, Councillor Hull. Your 2 minutes has expired. This is a scheme to get less stables in the residential area, but I completely respect the position that Councillor Hull is against that. I'll ask Mr. Della Coombs just to comment on some of those assertions of Councillor Hull, particularly the notion that this plan would in some way give licence to horse industry people to apply for stables in the residential area in Morphville and Glengarry.
Thank you, Chair. So the zoning has already changed as part of the transition to the PDI Act and the PD code. So it has already stripped out all of the horse-related commentary in the policies, and it is now in a suburban neighbourhood zone. So it is already residentially zoned. And what this policy is seeking to do is to allow those people the same opportunities as their neighbours, and for any applications to modify their existing properties would be assessed on merit with all standard planning points taken into consideration.
Thank you. Anyone else in favour of the motion? Then I'll see if Councillor Valescu wishes to close the debate. Any further comment?
Yeah, look, I think overwhelmingly the stable owners do support this. So there might be one or two that don't and will hang around, but we're reducing the horse activity and, the situation's changed. So I don't, I value the fact that Councillor Hull is wanting to, not have disruption in that area, but I actually think that this will reduce the disruption and people moving in will see that there is a stable and they'll, I guess, may choose not to move in there, but there'll be less of them. So it's a good thing.
All right, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried by majority. A division's called by Councillor Hull. So all those in favour, please raise your hand. That'll be fine. And that way I can see. I'll take the online people first. Councillors Mason, Hutchinson, Valescu and Masika. Those, and keep raising your hands if you're in the room, if you're in favour. Councillors Clancy, Pryor, Telfer, Schilling, Duncan and Crossland. Those against, raise your hand. Councillor Hull, the motion is carried by majority. Thank you. Now we move on to page 59, the proposed boundary realignment at Seacliff Park, where the proposed new housing development is overwhelmingly within the current boundary of the City of Marion, but not all of it. So, Councillor Crossland, yeah, take questions first, Councillor Crossland.
Just a few questions. I'm not quite sure why we need to proceed from stage one to stage two. If we just leave it as is, what would happen? And if we do move to stage two, is there a possibility that we might lose the 85% we currently have within our boundary?
Well, I'll leave Mr. Haridis to explain the stage one, stage two, but looking at it from the Mayor's point of view, we can be very conscious that a couple of months ago, Holdfast Bay Council moved that they would initiate a boundary change proposal. So if we do nothing, one would expect them to proceed with that. And their proposal would be that the entirety of the land would be included in the Holdfast Bay Council, including all of the residential apartments, which literally at the moment would be within the City of Marion. But as to stage one, stage two, Mr. Haridis, can you just explain that, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Mayor. It's important to note that stage one, titled Potential Proposal, as in the report, is the outline of any proponent to the Commission of what is being sought. So at that stage, it's the Commission's opportunity to understand the intentions of any party. So this could be a developer, it could be either council, it could be in combination. There's no obligation to move through to stage two. There would be greater clarity about some of the requirements. Also, some of the content that we have in the report talks to fees, and whilst we've given an indicative of what we've seen happen before, there's no preset value. So the Commission will basically assess the effort they feel they need to undertake to unpack the issues that are put forward and then attach a fee to that, and that would happen at stage two. So the commitment here or the request to progress really gives Council the opportunity to put its case forward, put its position forward, and then there are still assessments that can be made at that time whether to proceed or not.
So it is just, this recommendation is just to put a stage one potential proposal forward. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. So let's say we put a stage two proposal forward. Can't the Commissioner make a ruling that all the land comes to City of Marion or all the land goes to Holdfast Bay, even though we're paying for it? It doesn't guarantee the result. It's not the first one to pay gets the land.
That's true. Mr. Haridis?
No, that is correct.
And likewise, if we do nothing, we retain 85% unless Holdfast Bay pay the $200,000 to initiate a stage two proposal. I'm just trying to work out if we do nothing and Holdfast Bay pay the money, we probably, I would say, if it is an independent decision, still get the entire area ourselves without actually paying anything.
I suppose I invite Mr. Haridis to make a comment, but the calculation for members tonight really is as against the potential hundred and something thousand dollars which the Commission might ask of us, what is that against any perceived advantage in framing the argument by being the initiator and putting the facts forward as we would wish it, and then having Holdfast Bay comment on our proposal, as opposed to Holdfast Bay putting a proposal forward and us submitting a comment on that, which would be our right. Mr. Haridis?
Mayor, that is correct. So one thing is about setting the tone of how this is approached. That's an important consideration moving forward. I can't speak for the Commission. They could conceivably make any manner of assessment as they progress on this process. but it is worth due consideration about the opportunity to actually clearly communicate the position of council to the Boundaries Commission.
Councillor Crossland.
So this is more just a clarification because I've probably used my questions up. So point two is not a we're moving to stage two and we're funding it. We're just endorsing the funds to be made available. I'm not quite sure how that works. If we're endorsing the funds, but we're not giving you permission to make the stage two application.
The clause two could be left out, in which case administration would need to come back to council for funding when there's a response to the stage one proposal. Mr. Huidas?
Correct, or that could be set as note if council wanted to be aware of the potential cost, and that we would then come back to confirm the fees should we be invited and the commission formalise what that fee would be.
Any other questions before we move into a motion? Councillor Vlescu?
Yeah, I'd like to know if anyone, either councillors or staff, have spoken to anyone involved in government, elected officials, department people in regards to this. I just want to know if there's any other information we should be aware of that should be disclosed.
The one thing I can say is that as a result of a council resolution in, I think, 2019, the Mayor wrote to the Boundaries Commission with a letter asking for advice once the DAP had been approved. And I was happy to do that because at some point I personally, as Mayor, had been briefed that the Boundaries Commission would like to hear from councils in that way before they were considering putting in a proposal. So it seemed like a good idea at the time, but the Boundaries Commission wrote back, the letter is there in the report, essentially saying, well, we can't give you any advice, put in a proposal if you want to, summarising. So apart from that, it really is just the information in the report. It's still a very new process. We have successfully gone through the process in relation to the land at the very southern end of Hallett Cove. And there is a blessing in that, that we have a template at least in terms of the Boundary Commission determination. So we know in a sense what they're looking for. But the criteria are set out legislatively anyway. And it's going to depend on the issues you'd expect, community of interest, cost of assets, et cetera. Councillor Vlescu, does that help?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody else in the room
has Mr. Huidas? Yep, Mr. Huidas.
Thank you for the question, Councillor. Just for completeness, Mr. Della Coombs and I have met with state government staff. The nature of that was just to unpack the process so that we understand what's required moving forward. And it entirely aligns with the summary the Mayor's just given. They've provided templates. They've given us very non-committal advice of you'll need to progress the work and we'll assess as we go. But that's the extent of the nature we've had in terms of engagement with the state government, just to clarify process.
And none of the elected members have spoken to anyone?
Well, no one's putting their hand up. Councillor Masika, did you have a question?
Yes, a question, Your Worship. I wanted to find out from the administration whether they've approached the Holdfast Council, Holdfast Bay Council, to gauge their position in relation to the matter, because, pouring $200,000 and the answer is going to be negative from their side. So that's what I wanted to be sure. What is their position in terms of this matter if you go ahead to apply for stage?
So from administration, Mr. Huidas, do you want to just put that on the record? I'm seeing shaking heads here, but Mr. Huidas?
Thank you for the question, Councillor Masika. At this stage, no, we haven't had a direct engagement with the City of Holdfast administration on their position. We think it's clear from the recently moved motion of their council.
Just in respect of that motion and harking back to Councillor Crossland's questions, if we do nothing, in a sense, time is on the side of Holdfast Bay, because the more that the allotment is populated, the more the chemistry changes about where the line should be drawn. At the moment, in terms of who to consult, it's one developer and two councils. If you suddenly have a medical centre and a shopping centre and a gym and 500 apartments, it becomes a more complex, and one would think, a much more expensive investigation. So one might think that would play into the hands of Holdfast Bay Council's aspirations rather than ours, but that is a judgment for us to make tonight. Councillor Hole?
Question. Is it true that the newspaper reports indicate that the City of Holdfast Bay had a unanimous decision on this?
I have read the minutes and it was unanimous.
Unanimous, okay. In terms of the probing question by Councillor Valescu about have we spoken to anybody, well, quite some time ago I was invited out for coffee down to Seafaring Fools down at Holdfast Bay by the Mayor, and this was briefly touched on, but I think she quickly realised I wasn't interested in incursions into our city as we're currently looking at.
Well, that's sort of by way of a personal explanation, but it's noted, thank you. We should probably get into it and test a motion. Councillor Crossland.
Happy to move as printed, but I'd like to change point two as suggested by staff that notes that up to 200,000 will be required from savings.
Maybe
allocated or maybe required. Maybe up to 200,000, maybe required. Yeah.
Checking that the minutes. Secretary has that. Perhaps you can speak to that, Councillor Crossland. We'll come back to the checking the wording.
Look, very briefly, I think most of it's now being said. Look, I personally believe that this can only be connected to the City of Marion. A lot of what we're planning on the golf course and the current residents of Seacliff Park are very much motivated to see that site developed and linked to the golf course. I think if the whole area is disconnected from the City of Marion, then all those aspirations may be lost. So I think it's quite important. And I do now take the note that it's much easier to have a consultation with a developer than it is with thousands of different parties once it's developed.
Councillor Pryor.
I support this. Councillor Crossland asked pretty much all the same questions that I had, so that was very enlightening, and I think this is the most sensible way for us to proceed.
Anyone against? Councillor Valescu, speaking against?
No, I've just got a question to clarify. By changing notes, by changing point two to say notes instead of endorses, will that put us in any delay or disadvantage, or is it just would that impact at all tactically?
The only catch, if you like, is that a report would be brought back by administration after hearing back from the Boundaries Commission, but that's hardly much of a road bump along the way. So there being no real speaking against, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Thank you. That's carried unanimously. Move on. Moving perhaps the finance report and work health and safety report on block, pages 66 and 81. Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Telfer. So, Councillor, did you wish to speak to either of those, Councillors Schilling, Telfer, questions or comments? Councillor Pryor?
I just have one question, and it's about the graphs that start on page 72. And I've sent an email to Mr. Barmore, but this is just to get it on the record about getting those graphs for last year so that we can see the overall performance of the council. This is the July report, and it has 1 month worth of data. I'd like to see how we ended up last year, and then we can compare that to what we aspired to do last year.
Just dealing with a procedural question with the manager governance. Now, that seemed a reasonable question from Councillor Pryor. Mr. Barnwell.
Through the chair, and thank you for your question, Councillor Pryor. Yes, we're happy to bring back the FOIA graphs. What we will need to do is any adjustments or accruals which for expenditure which incurred after the year end, based on works that carried out before the year end, if you understand me, we'll need to incorporate that into the graph. So my suggestion was that when we bring back, and if you're happy with this, when we bring back the carryovers with the first budget review, that we'll incorporate the full year's graph so council can see full year's graph of all works carried out, plus the carryover report included in that.
So there are two things then. One is having the current figures with a representation of how much is carryover expenditure and how much is this year's budget, so to speak. And the other aspect is having a comparison between this month and the same month last year. I think that's what Councillor Pryor was talking about.
I think what Councillor Pryor might be looking for is that how do we finish up for the whole year? So whilst we've got the July graphs here, that's just 1 month, but we don't normally bring a end of year report because we're actually in the middle of our preparing for our auditors to start on site yesterday. So I think what, if I understand you correctly, the question was that can we bring back a full report? How do we perform against our full year's budget in each of these in a graphic form?
Could I leave it to Councillor Pryor to take it out and have a discussion, Mr. Barnwell, between meetings? The intent seems pretty reasonable at the risk of a slightly longer report. And more useful information. So I can leave it to happen between meetings. Another question came from Councillor Holt.
With the lost time injury report, at the last meeting, our new CEO tended to allude to us that the measure that we're using is not realistic in some fashion. Is it possible to get a local government industry measure? So if what Mr. Harrison's saying is correct, that we can actually look at this and see in a reasonable sense what is going well and what's not going well.
Councillor Hull, there might be a confusion between two things. One is a comparison with other LGA entities. The other is the KPI, which we had set ourselves of a percentage reduction year on year. When the numbers are more or less than 10, it starts to become a bit unrealistic in the sense you can have one extra injury and have a failure of a KPI. So that was I think the comments that you heard Mr. Harrison making earlier about the KPI. But in relation to comparison with other local government areas, Ms. McKenzie can make a comment.
Through the chair, the lost time injury frequency rate is what is used across the sector to measure performance in this. So if you go to page 84, you'll see that on the graphs, the green line indicates the group average. So this is the ones where we compare against the sector.
Councillor, back to Councillor Pryor.
For that one as well, can we also compare against our 19-20 performance, please? Because that, to me, looks like the benchmark now, given we floated out in 2021. Thank you.
So that can come back next time the report comes. Thank you. Are there going to be continuing WHNS reports at General Council? Yes, thank you. Councillor Hull, did you have another one?
I just see that the reporting is linked to the KPI because your KPI is measured from the report. So that was the only point that I was going to make. But I'm not sure how we get around the issue that you described better than me about the KPI being influenced by a small number.
Mr. Harrison?
I guess the only thing I could add in addition to those comments on the graph that is figure one, the top of page 83, I think presents a more realistic understanding for administration's management of a safe workplace, as well as information of members as to how we're performing month by month, but over a 12-month or possibly a 2 to 3 year period, which we could easily do, to determine as to how we're tracking based on such low numbers and the sensitivity of those numbers, in the sense if we had one extra injury, we potentially go up or down 10% at the moment. So I would put a lot of emphasis, I guess, on rather than just the month's performance of zero, as to how that is tracking over a 12-month or possibly up to a 36-month period of time. I think that gives us a more realistic understanding on performance when we are dealing with such low numbers, which create extra levels of sensitivity as to whether we're doing well or otherwise in these particular categories. That's where I would certainly be looking the first time I get this graph, is looking at the trend line to see whether it's going up or down. Fortuitously, the last 3 months we're sort of tracking down and we've hit a zero for the month of July, but one or two injuries certainly can distort that line at the same time.
Like that's another one where a longer time period might come back next time the report comes. Now, was it Councillor Duncan? Did you have one? No, Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. It's a couple of questions, and I'm not sure whether it's completely relevant to this section, but I just want to confirm. Recently read a report which showed that there was, and I can't give you the details, but where a project went up 300% and money was just shifted into that project without council knowing. And the comment was made that because we noted a report like an annual review, we inadvertently approved it. Are we approving anything like that in this report? And how would I find out if that was happening?
Mr. Barnwell.
Through the chair, no, you're not approving anything. This report is for noting. There's no decisions based on shifting funding and anything here. Budget reviews 1, 2, 3 is where council will endorse moving funds from project to project, or if there's endorsed savings coming through. So it's at the budget reviews. You endorse your original budget back on the 22nd of June, and you'll have a budget review 1, 2, and 3 coming throughout the year where we endorse funding.
And I've also found out that when council resolution approves some capital expenditure on a set project, that staff can remove it and it just disappears without any resolution. Is that happening as well that you would be aware of?
The only funding that would be removed if the funding wasn't required for a particular capital project, but that funding will end up in council savings at the end of the year. It's not going to be removed and spent off on something else without council's approval.
At what time would council be made aware that that project had been cancelled?
Councillor Crossland, do you mean a cancelled project or an underspent project? Because it just
talking about for example, the particular thing I'm talking about is council has a footpath plan. We agreed to build a footpath this financial year. That footpath is no longer going to be built, even though it's contained in the council resolution and policy. But apparently that can be decision made by staff. But I'm trying to find out how we would be notified that that had happened normally.
So that does sound surprising when you put it like that. Mr. Barnwell, can you help? Or maybe Mr. Lyons could help?
I think when council projects are when we endorse our budget in June, there's a list of capital works projects, which is probably what you're referring to. There is also, as the program may vary subject to priorities, I guess. But the owners of those particular capital projects probably should be the ones informing council.
So I'll ask Mr. Lyons to come forward and take up a microphone and shed any light on that, please.
Through the chair, this footpath has been the subject of ward briefing, and I know yourself and Councillor Gard are aware of that, of course. This was part of the annual business plan. It was the intention to put a footpath along there. The community consultation has been undertaken, and there was a two-thirds majority against that footpath that we're aware of. And so we've liaised with the ward councillors and determined that it shouldn't go ahead. The question is, what will happen to that money? Will it stays in the footpath program pool? And at the end of the year, or let's say halfway through the year, if we continue to be underspent, then we could bring forward some works from other years.
That sounds a rational explanation, Councillor Crossan.
Okay, I would say two things. I didn't think ward briefings could make decisions and change a decision of council. And number two, the ward councillors aren't in favour of cancelling that capital expenditure. So I don't know who's told you that, but that's not true.
All right. Well, I don't think it's for a back and forth in a general council meeting, but I would invite either staff or one of the councillors to bring it to council as a motion, then it can be determined. I mean, as we all know, the ward briefings are an informal process and there's a huge amount of business and information transfer that can happen there. But no, the councillors in a ward briefing can't themselves authorise a capital project or necessarily cancel one. When there's something uncontroversial, when a new fact appears, perhaps the entire road collapses, so you're not going to put the footpath there, there may not be any controversy. But if there's some controversy about it, then it should come back to council and we can resolve it as a group, especially when there's been a previous decision. But I'll leave it to management and Councillor Crossland, if need be, to take that up between meetings. Any other questions or comments regarding those two reports? Then yes, they've been moved and seconded. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, I think development expiations, because it's a new thing, I think we should just take that by itself. It is for information, but I'll just ask for a mover and seconder and then take questions. Anyone want to move? Just that we note the report, very straightforward. Councillor Telfer, did you wish to speak to it at this stage, Councillor Telfer? Any questions, observations?
We take a while to actually get around to enforcing what we've decided on, and it's taken several years. So I look forward to us moving forward on this. These are often small building upgrades that people feel that they are on top of, but there has to be a system and a procedure and rules. So I support the moving from just negotiations to expiation when it's required.
Thank you. And because it is a new thing, is this, can I just chip in there? Is this something where we could have a 12-month report from when the from the commencement of the ability to expiate those offences? That's a sort of a rhetorical question. I presume we can. Yes, says Mr. Huidas. Is that seconded? Councillor Duncan, you wish to add anything? Questions, Councillor Hull?
The $750 penalty that applies to all of these, is that a mandated state government penalty?
Dadella Coombs.
Thank you. I should also note the team leader of building should be online for any detailed questions, but from my knowledge, there is a range of expiations available. So that one applies to certain classes of offences.
Right. So it could be more than 750 then.
Do you have a page to refer to, Mr. Oh, here we go. Excuse me. So through the chair, those are the fees set down in the regulations of the PDI Act. So yes, that is the fee. Yep.
In your opinion, given the gravity of some of the offences and the expense involved to purchases of properties, we dealt with a monumental one in Warradale not long ago that became a protracted affair over a balcony and all that. Do you think that's actually going to cut it, that $750 penalty for, they'll pay the $750 and move on and life's good. So, it could be quite a small consequence for some of the benefits that some of these people can gain from doing the wrong thing during the development of their properties.
Bill Coombs.
Thank you. Through the chair, we've got a pretty good idea of who's breaching this currently. And so the team leader of building has already begun a process of alerting people of this intention that we're going to pursue. I would think it would have an impact because some of the people that are breaching this will be the repeat offenders and will get repeat fines. And so we're certainly hoping to see that behaviour change from us taking this more formal approach has a benefit to those people who may be suffering as a result of this. The other point I'll make is that for the serious offences, and as we have done in the past, the more serious breaches is where court action would be pursued as an addition to this. So this is like that interim stage. That's just more of a day-to-day operation for staff that we can now entertain. And for those more serious ones, more serious action would be considered.
Mr. Haridis, want to add something?
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's an important additional point, Councillor, that the expiation doesn't mean they then stop their process and they pay a fee and they remain uncompliant. It is a trigger. They'll be expiated and they then still need to go through the process, and we'll be monitoring that to ensure that they address the issues that have been identified. So they don't get to pay their way out of something, but via the expiation. The expiation is a penalty, and then we'll continue to ensure that compliance is met.
Very well. If there are no other questions, I can just put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, at the risk of combining two weighty and significant issues, the next two reports regarding Disability Action Plan and the Reconciliation Action Plan could be moved en bloc, but if you don't think that's appropriate, you can do otherwise. Councillor Schilling, move en bloc, yes. Did you wish to speak at this stage? Seconded, Councillor Telfer. You wish to speak, Councillor Telfer?
No.
Then anyone speaking against a question, Councillor Hull?
I'll start with the RAP first. Do we have the staff member here? Okay. It's a positive, a question on a positive note, Mr. Mayor. I think we may have sold ourselves short there. I'll go to the page. It's page 123. I wrote it down.
23 is still with the.
Oh, it is too. Okay. Well, I'll deal with that one first. Item 32, delivery of curb ramp improvement schedule across the city. Now, with this whole report, Mr. Mayor, the timeframes are a bit loose. And this one in particular, which I find is a very important issue for disabled people to be able to negotiate our streets and footpaths. And it was first dealt with ages ago when the federal legislation first came.
Just keep it to a factual question, please, Councillor.
Schedule delivered. This schedule is likely to extend beyond 2024, yet it says here 2021, and a tick. Now, I really don't like the use of green ticks when we haven't been hitting the target, when we haven't completed. So I'd like an explanation for that one in particular, and to actually review all of these green ticks and to see whether they are actually green ticks. If there's merit.
Should we ask Ms. Batt to comment?
Through the chair, and thanks for the question. Certainly, this report is to give an indication on the actions implemented in the previous financial year. So whilst the CURB program does continue into the future years of implementation, we're reporting on just this 1 year. We report to the state government. We're using the template that they've provided. So that's the green ticks. So that can be changed, but that's the template that we've provided. The day it will continue to be implemented.
It's a state government tick, Councillor Hull. Mr. Harris is going to add to that.
Thank you. Can also suggest that it is a schedule and we're reporting on the last financial year period and it is a four-year plan. So I think it's right in suggesting that TIC refers to the success of implementation of the delivery of curbs for the period of 12 months of the four-year plan in accordance with the schedule that we've set ourselves. And yes, most likely it will go beyond 2024 because this plan will have to be renewed for the 24 or the 23-27 period, I think it is actually. And we will then progressively allocate targets of ramp delivery on a year-by-year basis over the next four-year plan. So I think it is indicative and correct to suggest that it is a positive tick for what we have delivered for this 12-month period, 12 months of a four-year plan.
Questions, Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, if I can extrapolate on that point, we're actually going over work that was done within the last 10 years and redoing them. You might recall, Mr. Mayor, I raised concern about these curb ramps being built some 4 metres from an intersection. In other words, you're trying to negotiate that and a car can come around the corner and not even be aware you're there. That's changed.
Yeah, what's your question, Councillor?
Well, now we're actually going back and correcting all of those. So the headway that we should be making, we're not, because we're repairing bad judgments.
It's a debating point, not a question, do you
mind? Well, I'm just pointing out that we're not hitting the target, whether it's a state government green tick or not. This area is of great concern to me that we're not meeting expectations of our community.
Right. This is your chance to either speak in the debate or ask any questions. Okay. Anything else?
There is. On a positive note with the RAP, I'd like to ask whether we've sold ourselves short. In procurement, it says, in terms of Aboriginal procurement, it says nil. Is that correct?
Page reference would always help. Thank you, Councillor Hull.
Well, it's towards the end of the report, as I remember, but I'm sure it says nil. Yet, recently, we had a tender process and awarded a contract. Guess what? To an Aboriginal organisation. So we should not be putting nil down. That should be a positive. Now, that particular organisation is mentioned earlier in the report, but in an area where we can actually put a positive outcome, we haven't done that. So can that be revisited by...
It rather depends on what is meant by procurement, and the outsourcing of management of the LKCC may not come under the procurement definition, but could either Ms. Batt or one of the managers respond?
Through the chair, I can respond on the matter that, as far as I'm aware, our systems don't capture the identity of the organisation. We don't capture whether it's an Aboriginal organisation or not. In terms to SCI, if I could refer to one of the executive, please.
I think that the question was about procurement in particular, and Councillor Hull is pointing out somewhere in the dozens of responses which are required by the template, something about a low score for procurement. And here we are. Yes, top of page 137. Procurement from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses. And so the answer was not zero, but it was we are not able to calculate this figure because I think Ms. Batt was just saying that the successful tenderers aren't assessed for whether they are Aboriginal businesses or not, however that might be defined. Is that right, Ms. Batt?
I believe so. I don't know how we capture. I don't have the answer to how, in terms of broader procurement for the organisation, I don't know how we capture that as Aboriginal or not. In specific scenarios, we may be able to. That might be done through the tendering process, but that would be done by the individual.
Okay, we've got Mr. Lawrence may be able to say something about the procurement question. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence.
I would simply, through the chair, simply add that I think the councillor makes an excellent point. We have sourced services from them. We haven't, we're paying them to provide a service. And I think we'll take that on notice and get back to the group.
Thank you. Then if there are no further questions, we've had a mover and a seconder. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So on to the local, government. What page are we on? 140. I know I had a very, very important question about election signs, but Ms. McKenzie, would you like to take us through the highlights of these local government legislation changes?
So, through the chair, you'll note from the report that at this stage we still don't have any clear implementation dates yet. What the report does on page 141 is it breaks the sections down into what we're expecting to come into place in August, noting that obviously August, the end of August is next week and we still haven't got a date. There is actually a session that's been set up for Thursday where we're hoping to get some further information. The next parts that are listed on page 141 then indicate those sections that we're which we are expecting to come into play in November. And then the larger sections, which is the last part there, obviously they're the ones that need a fair bit of substantial work. And we're expecting those to come in by the end of the financial year or November next year at the election time. What we have done is circulated a copy of the Act to all elected members, which has all of the markups. So if you would have noted that, it's got all the markups and the deletions in there in red. For the purposes of this report, what we have included and what we will do to members is continue to bring through the regulations as they come to hand. So there is two in particular that we're seeking feedback on tonight. And then depending on how the mayor wishes to do it, we're happy to open up to questions in regards to any of the specific sections that people may want further information on.
Well, I do appreciate that the entire Local Government Act with amendments was circulated to members, but it's a little overwhelming, if I might say, for people, especially for the many of us who work full time, you know, in employment apart from council activities. So I think we are after some sort of session where the provisions which are most meaningful to elected members are highlighted. That's why I'm asking about election signs. Ms. McKenzie?
We haven't got any indication on election signs yet, I don't believe, whether they're going to be banned or not. At the moment, they're currently sitting within a policy position from, and it's up to, it's always been based on whether that'd be allowed on other infrastructure from other providers.
All right. Well, I'm sure you'll keep us informed. Mm-hmm. But now, as to the two issues tonight, do you want to deal with those one by one? And we may need a suspension of standing orders, I think, just to find where members stand on this, and then we can formulate an appropriate motion. But
just quickly before you move on, the items that will impact members are the ones that will be coming in last. These are the ones that regard the substantial piece of work. So these is your public consultation policy, conflicts of interest, elected member training and development, the ability to be able to suspend a member, gifts and benefits, the elected member behavioural standards. There's a large piece of work that will be required to be undertaken there. The audit committee, although they are substantial changes, our audit committee is very close to complying with the current requirements anyway. So it is those last parts, which we don't actually have a heap of information on yet anyway, that will be the parts that have the greatest change to council.
Thank you. But there are matters that you want us to decide about tonight. I suppose the only other one that I know is a bit of a hot topic occasionally for elected members is obtaining legal advice. What's the change to 78A?
Yeah, so that section from the Act has been deleted. It doesn't preclude council from still, if you wish to have a policy of that nature, you could retain a policy. It's just that it won't be provided within the Act as an option for councils to do.
So we would continue, well, there's no reason not to continue because of these changes with council's current policy, which allows elected members to seek advice in very restricted circumstances.
The policy would just need a slight amendment because obviously it refers to the current Act. So we would just have to amend it, but council could certainly make a policy position that it would still make those funds available in certain circumstances.
And that would that come up when we annually go through the elected members' benefits policy?
We've actually listed it because it is a separate policy. It sits outside of the existing elected member expense policy. So we have listed it to bring in with some of the changes that are some of the policy amendments that are coming through so members can actually have some discussion around what they want to do with it.
All right. I hope other members found that fascinating as I did. Could someone move a suspension of standing orders? Councillor Schilling, thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Hull. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. And I say that because we need to have a brief discussion about these two issues and then we can formulate an appropriate motion. So perhaps Ms. McKenzie, you could take us through it.
Sure. So the first one that we have is just in regards to the amendment to the Local Government Elections Act. What this is saying is if there's a casual vacancy that occurs within 12 months of the election, it won't go to a supplementary election and you'll be able to. And so what they're asking for is what is council's preferences of how that person would be elected. The two that are being proposed is the next highest candidate, which would essentially be the next person on the ballot paper. So if it was a ward election and there was two positions voted, whoever came in number three would automatically come on. The next one is preferred candidates, where what would happen is the person who was removed from their seat causing the casual vacancy, their votes would then be redistributed in a preferential mode, and that would then create who the candidate was. So in simplest term, the next highest is a very simple method. So the preferred candidate includes preferential voting, essentially.
So there you are, members. There's definitely going to be this. One of these two methods is going to come in.
Yep.
So we need to decide which we prefer. We have actually had this argument before about voting in council elections generally. And I don't mean it dismissively when I talk about first past the post being the English method, but because it is very much favoured over there. But you've either got the simplest solution, which is the highest score, or you've got the more democratic solution, which is the two-party preferred. Now, sometimes they will give the same outcome, sometimes they won't. But does anyone have any questions or comments before we just ask for a show of hands on that? Councillor Hull, then Councillor Clancy.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. If you went with the next highest, it could be that the person that actually gets elected in this fashion could actually have a higher vote than the person that they were replacing.
In terms of primary votes.
In terms of primary votes, yeah.
Yes, well, that is one of the quirks of the two-party preferred system.
In terms of record keeping, would that mean that council or the electoral commission would have to keep records for 12 months just on the off chance that this happened?
The electoral commission would have to, yeah.
Yep, okay. And in terms of those failed candidates being tapped on the shoulder to think about this, it would be subject to them being alive and capable of...
Yes, Ms. McKenzie, have you looked at that? What happens if the person who's tapped on the shoulder has realised that council's the last thing they want to do?
Not sure. It obviously hasn't covered that. We can certainly put that within our feedback, indicating that, will it continue down the line if that is the case, if you're going to go with the next highest?
Line of royal succession, that sort of thing.
Just Yes. One last question. Yes. Cost. Is there a cost saving with this? Obviously, if you're not going out to do a re-election, there could be cost saving. But what is the cost to the council, the electoral commission, for their management of this?
It would be minimal. It would certainly be less than what a supplementary election would cost.
Okay. Councillor Clancy.
I was just going to make the comment that the preferential system means that more people get a candidate that's above their least preferred candidate.
That's right. Councillor Schilling.
Thank you, Your Worship. I think, yeah, moving to this idea is a good idea. No offence to Councillor Mason, but in that scenario, we would have gone to the next council and would have had to go to a supplementary election. Technically would save us some money. But I think I would prefer preferential because I came fourth on primary but won the second spot. So I think a preferential voting would be the best.
When in doubt, reflect on your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'll ask for a quick show of hands as to the highest count, which is a first past the post principle, or secondly, two-party preferred in terms of something that is being forced upon us anyway, which is this method of appointing someone to a casual vacancy. So as to the highest number method, as to the two-party preferred method, right, that's pretty clear. And now as to the behaviour management framework, This is just about the timing of it coming in. So Ms. McKenzie, what can you tell us?
So this is just about the timing. Obviously we know at the moment of what is written within the legislation, within the new sections, which is sections 75, it has a number of new components in there. There is a reasonably large amount of work to do in this. We'll have to do some consultation with members in the development of it. The suggestion is to either bring it in June next year or wait until after the elections in November 2022.
Questions or comments? Councillor Hull.
In terms of the whole behaviour process, which is like the code of conduct process that we know well, after the election, but what about during the election process? Has the council got the ability to actually, by decree, by the code of conduct, to actually enshrine in our behaviour during an election that the code of conduct applies for the whole time you're an elected member? Can it cover elections?
Yes, it does cover elections. It currently does.
That's not what we were told a little while back, was it?
Pretty sure that's the advice that's been provided consistently across council.
Well,
Councillor Valescu.
So just wanted to clarify, the code of conduct covers the councillor's behaviour, but it doesn't cover the councillor as a candidate's behaviour. I think, is that how I see the difference?
Ms. McKenzie?
So my understanding of this is it comes into the definition of a public officer, and if you're acting as a public officer, if you're acting in that capacity, then the code of conduct will apply.
All right, any other questions or comments? Councillor Clancy.
Just a question for Ms. McKenzie. Would this be significant work for admin to fast track the process?
I think it's doable to achieve it by June, and certainly that's what they indicate. The difference will be that you'll have the new behavioural codes then implemented during the caretaker period and in the lead-in, so you'll have the new provisions in place then rather than coming in after an election. So I think that's what they're trying to gauge of what people would like to see.
So, Councillor Crossland?
I don't know if you can answer this. It may be a bit out there, but how, I know these are definitely do need changing, but how aligned are these to the state MPs' behavioural codes and things? How do they compare? Are we copying them now? Well, that's what I'm thinking, obviously. If they're bringing it in for us, is it similar to their own code?
I think these have been implemented for local government specifically. I'm not sure that they're replicated in the state.
They can tell us what to do. We can't tell them what to do. I think it's the principle. Sometimes we shouldn't learn by example. Councillor Schilling.
I have a couple of other questions about local government reforms in general. Can I ask them now or can I ask them later?
Yes, thanks.
Yep. My first one is around the reduction of our numbers. My understanding it has to be 12, so it would become 11 plus 1 rather than 12 plus 1 at where we are currently. Will that have to be implemented before the next election?
No. So the changes, I didn't think that one ended up getting up.
That's good, because that's different what I heard at work, but anyway.
Yeah, it was 12. I'm pretty sure you were correct. It was 12 plus 1, good. So our numbers won't be impacted. However, my understanding is for those councils that will be, they'll be required to do a representation review, and it will be corrected through that process.
Okay. My next question is around the nomination form process. I've got no issues with the way they're changing it and ticking that I'm a member of a political party, got no issues with that. I've never hidden away from it. But why just political parties? What about groups like, say, Get Up or other groups that have influential support throughout the community? Is there any reason why they haven't included those in just political parties?
I think the standard across the board has been the political parties. I mean, the question is then how far do you take it? Yeah. That's clearly the one where people have an interest of if people are politically aligned. But we can certainly feed it back if there was any consideration around that, but I'm not sure.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And my last question is around still with the nomination process, we have to declare that we live in the council area and whether we live in the ward. What if you have a suppressed address?
If you have a suppressed address, you will still need to comment in regards to whether you live in the council area or the ward, but you don't obviously need to indicate what your address is. Okay,
great.
Right, so members, it's pretty, you know, we can, Ms. McKenzie can help us formulate a motion pretty easily based on those straw poll responses, that we suggest our feedback being the preferred candidate method of filling a casual vacancy. We haven't really got to this June or November business. Let's have a show of hands on that. Who prefers June? Who prefers November? Well, that sounds like a June. It's worth doing. It's worth doing early. So if we just put that feedback, is there anything else that anyone is suggesting that we incorporate at this point? Councillor Hull?
Only that it's clear that this behavioural expectations apply the whole time you're an elected member, regardless of whether there's an election or not.
The answer's been given to you. Yes, it does.
Well, I'll find that legal advice that we had. And because Jamie Bates gave exactly the same answer as you did, only to find out that that wasn't correct. So,
well, I think that's something. Councillor Hull, could you have a chat with Ms. McKenzie in between meetings and just clarify understanding,
certainly,
make sure we're on the same page?
Yep.
Otherwise, do we have a motion that reflects the discussion? Standing orders is resumed. Just members can check on the screen. They're happy with the wording. All right.
Sorry. We can't see.
So I beg your pardon. I can read that out. Notes the Local Government Act, etc. 2, provides feedback, et cetera, that when a casual vacancy occurs within 12 months of an election, the vacancy will be filled by the method of preferred candidate, should apply to mayoral and councillor positions. Clause 3, provides feedback, et cetera, that relates to the member behaviour policy or provisions commencing in June 2022. So pretty well as we just discussed.
Thank you.
So Councillor Schilling was prepared to move that way. Seconded Councillor Clancy. Mm-hmm. And any further debate, then I'll ask for a show of hands if you approve. Carried unanimously. Thank you.
Do you want to bring forward that late report
to the board? Before we go into confidential. Yeah. Yes. Now, there was a late report. The mayor put his, before we go into confidential matters, well, we've got a couple of things, questions with notice, and then there was also the late report, which is on page 154. So first of all, noting the questions with notice, any comments or questions? The only thing I'll raise there is that discussions have been had amongst managers and the mayor as to whether there's been a breach of a code of conduct. As a result, Councillor Hull, the question arises in the event that you contacted Colin James about a newspaper article. So if Mr. James contacted you, the question then is about the content of your conversation and whether you were accurately quoted and whether you made statements inconsistent with maintaining public trust and confidence in the council. Do you want to speak to that?
Well, Mr. Mayor, well, may the public wonder whether they can have trust and confidence in this council after the way we found out about this information. And that's refuted that answer, by the way, and I've made that clear to Mr. Harrison and to Mr. Scull. And other elected members have bought into it as well since, saying what's going on. And they should be, because this is not the way that elected members should be treated. It's not the way that the policy for corruption and notification of these fraud issues to us should be dealt with. When we find out, from a member of the bowling club from Edwardstown, and then I have to ask a question on notice to find out what the ultimate outcome was with the pursuit of this man. Not only that, I don't think we've been even told the full story. I think there's other issues that we should be aware of, which I won't divulge now with a microphone on. But if you want to pursue me on this, do it properly, do a proper code of conduct process, not a kangaroo court here in this fashion.
Well, I asked the question and gave you the opportunity to answer, so that'll be taken into account, no doubt, though what you've said in particular in relation to the fraud policy is debatable, to say the least, particularly when, you know, the manner of offending was not necessarily what is intended with the fraud policy, which is directed at fraud against the council.
Can I just jump in there with a procedural question?
Yes, Councillor.
Can I just confirm, because I wasn't aware we were going to have a cross-examination in the middle of a council meeting on an item that I never knew was going to come to council. Can I just guess, is that appropriate, or can we wait until we've got a code of conduct and then deal with it with a report?
Through the chair, usually questions on notice, they are taken as read and we moved on. If there is points of clarification, we can take them at the time.
I don't intend to take it further, Councillor Crossland, but often I do allow comment or question when a question on notice comes up, particularly when it's contentious material. Councillor Schilling, go ahead.
Just with regards to the new residence kit, changing topics, it said that they've been sent out to new residents. Technically, I was a new resident, for example, last year, and I didn't get one.
I think the report acknowledges that they weren't sent out last year.
So why didn't we send them out? I didn't really get that from the answer.
Have we got a manager who can add to that brief answer? Ms. Dinsmore?
Ms. Dinsmore, maybe, but I can give it a quick go. My understanding was that when we moved into the COVID restrictions, because there was limited staff on site and it was a process that actually requires a manual process to obviously stuff, deliver and send out, that was why they were stopped.
But we still got our rates notices.
The new resident kit is much larger than a rates notice. So it sits, I think, in a three size. I'm not 100% sure, but that was the reason why, is just because of the manual process of what was required to deliver them.
Yes, I can always come back with another question or notice. But if there's nothing further, we'll just move on. With your leave, it might be worth dealing with one more non-confidential matter before going to the confidential items. So there's a late report, page 154, statewide super board. I think I might need to declare a conflict of interest, a material conflict, and I would propose to leave the room. So the deputy mayor might wish to, you could probably chair from his point in the chamber, and I'll leave the room for this item.
Does this prove to be a conflict of interest for anyone that is a part of this superannuation scheme?
Through the chair, no, with this one, just because there is a remuneration for the position and we are obviously voting for Chris or the Mahana to be the nominee on behalf of Marion. He will still need to go through the election process for it. Right. However, there is a fee attached to it.
Councillor Duncan.
I just have a question about this. I know Mayor Han has got a lot on his plate already, and I just question whether this is going to add more and will he be efficient in all of the things he does if he takes this on?
I think that's probably a question you have to take up with Mayor Hannah. I don't know whether anyone else can answer that question.
It's a bit late after we voted.
Through the chair, I would assume that he has requested to put forward the nomination on the basis that he can manage the workload.
Okay, does anyone have a motion for us? Councillor Clancy.
Can we please note the report and nominate Mayor Hannah to the LGA for the appointment on the statewide superannuation board?
And point three as well. To forward the nominations. Yep. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Masika, would you like to speak to that, Councillor?
No, Deputy Mayor, I would like to say what Councillor Clance has said and then nominate Councillor Mayor Hannah for the position.
Do I have any speakers against? Councillor Duncan.
As stated before, I question whether we'll have a very effective mayor if he adds to his load already.
Thank you, Councillor. Do I have any more speakers in favour? Councillor Valesky.
Yeah, look, I think Mayor Hannah's able to identify his capacity and, so I think that his effectiveness of mayor, that's up to him to decide. I don't think it's, people have those personal assumptions, that's up to them. But I would say in this instance, I'd support him because I don't think he'd take stuff on if he didn't think he would do the work. And he's does a lot of preparation for meetings. A lot of stuff and goes through the agendas quite well. So it's not as if it's the CEO asking to be a member of, several other boards. It's a different situation.
Is there any more speakers against? No, I'll return to Councillor Clancy if she'd like to comment and close the debate.
I agree with some of the other councillors that Mayor Hannah can decide whether or not he's got the capacity to fulfil the role. And also, we're not actually appointing him here. We're just putting him forward to the LGA.
Thank you. And with that, I'll put the vote. All those in favour? And all those against? The motion is carried by majority. And with that, I will return to my seat.
Item concluded. We conclude this part of the meeting and there'll be a short break while we transfer online to a confidential meeting. Yes, that's a good point. The confidentiality, there doesn't seem to be any great objection to those. Moved Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Telfer. All those in favour? Carried on block unanimously. Thank you. Declare this part of the meeting closed and we'll in a moment commence the confidential session.